the salver portion of the apartment to find the lady in question waiting for them with less than breakfast, and with considerably more, too. 78. Cecilia Tissalver stood ramrod straight, with a tight smile on her round face and her dark eyes glinting. Her husband was leaning moodily against the wall. In the center of the room were two men who were standing stiffly upright, as though they had noticed the cushions on the floor but scorned them. Both had the dark, crisp hair and the thick black mustache to be expected of Dalites. Both were thin, and both were dressed in dark clothes so nearly alike that they were surely uniforms. There was thin white piping up and over the shoulders and down the sides of the tubular trouser legs. Each had, on the right side of his chest, a rather dim spaceship and sun, the symbol of the Galactic Empire on every inhabited world of the galaxy, with, in this case, a dark D in the center of the sun. Selden realized immediately that these were two members of the Dalite security forces. "What's all this?" said Selden sternly. One of the men stepped forward. "I am Sector Officer Lanel Ross. This is my partner, Gabor Astenwald." Both presented glittering identification holotabs. Selden didn't bother looking at them. "What is it you want?" Ross said calmly, "Are you Harry Selden of Helicon?" "I am." "And are you Doris Vanabili of Cinna, mistress?"
"I am," said Doris.
"I'm here to investigate a complaint that one Harry Selden instigated a riot yesterday."
"I did no such thing," said Selden.
"Our information is," said Russ, looking at the screen of a small computer pad, "that you accused a newsman of being an Imperial agent, thus instigating a riot against him."
Doris said, "It was I who said he was an Imperial agent, officer. I had reason to think he was. It is surely no crime to express one's opinion. The Empire has freedom of speech."
"That does not cover an opinion deliberately advanced in order to instigate a riot."
"How can you say it was, officer?"
At this point, Mistress Tissalver interposed in a shrill voice.
"I can say it, officer. She saw there was a crowd present, a crowd of gutter people who were just looking for trouble. She deliberately said he was an Imperial agent when she knew nothing of the sort, and she shouted it to the crowd to stir them up. It was plain that she knew what she was doing."
"Cecilia," said her husband pleadingly. But she cast one look at him, and he said no more. Russ turned to Mistress Tissalver. "Did you lodge the complaint, mistress?"
"Yes. These two have been living here for a few days, and they've done nothing but make trouble. They've invited people of low reputation into my apartment, damaging my standing with my neighbors."
"Is it against the law, officer?" asked Selden, "to invite clean, quiet citizens of Dahl into one's room?" "The two rooms upstairs are our rooms. We have rented them, and they are paid for. Is it a crime to speak to Dahlites in Dahl, officer?" "No, it is not," said Russ. "That is not part of the complaint. What gave you reason, Mistress Vanabili, to suppose the person you so accused was, in fact, an Imperial agent?" Doris said, "He had a small brown mustache, from which I concluded he was not a Dalite. I surmised he was an Imperial agent."
"You surmised? Your associate, Master Selden, has no mustache at all. Do you surmise he is an Imperial agent?"
"In any case," said Selden hastily, "there was no riot. We asked the crowd to take no action against the supposed newsman, and I'm sure they didn't."
"You're sure, Master Selden?" said Russ. Our information is that you left immediately after making your accusation. How could you witness what happened after you left?
I couldn't, said Selden. But let me ask you, is the man dead? Is the man hurt?
The man has been interviewed. He denies he is an Imperial agent, and we have no information that he is. He also claims he was handled roughly.
He may well be lying in both respects, said Selden. I would suggest a psychic probe.
That cannot be done on the victim of a crime, said Russ. The sector government is very firm on that. It might do if you two, as the criminals in this case, each underwent a psychic probe. Would you like us to do that?
Selden and Doris exchanged glances for a moment, then Selden said,
No, of course not.
Of course not, repeated Russ with just a tinge of sarcasm in his voice. But you're ready enough to suggest it for someone else.
The other officer, Astenwald, who had so far not said a word, smiled at this.
Russ said, We also have information that 2 days ago you engaged in a knife fight in Bellybottom and badly hurt a Dahlite citizen named...
He struck a button on his computer pad and studied the new page on the screen.
Elgin Marin.
Doris said, Does your information tell you how the fight started?
That is irrelevant at the moment, mistress. Do you deny that the fight took place?
Of course we don't deny the fight took place, said Selden hotly. But we deny that we in any way instigated that. We were attacked. Mistress Venabili was seized by this Marin, and it was clear he was attempting to rape her. What happened afterward was pure self-defense. Or does Dahl condone rape?
Russ said with very little intonation in his voice, You say you were attacked. By how many?
10 men.
And you alone, with a woman, defended yourself against 10 men?
Mistress Venabili and I defended ourselves, yes.
How is it, then, that neither of you shows any damage whatever? Are either of you cut or bruised where it doesn't show right now?
No, officer.
How is it, then, that in the fight of 1 plus a woman against 10, you are in no way hurt, but that the complainant Elgin Marin has been hospitalized with wounds and will require a skin transplant on his upper lip?
We fought well, said Selden grimly.
Unbelievably well. What would you say if I told you that 3 men have testified that you and your friend attacked Marin unprovoked?
I would say that it belies belief that we should. I'm sure that Marin has a record as a brawler and knife man. I tell you that there were 10 there. Obviously, 6 refused to swear to a lie. Do the other 3 explain why they did not come to the help of their friend if they witnessed him under unprovoked attack and in danger of his life? It must be clear to you that they are lying.
Do you suggest a psychic probe for them?
Yes. And before you ask, I still refuse to consider one for us.
Russ said, We have also received information that yesterday, after leaving the scene of the riot, you consulted with one Devan, a known subversive who is wanted by the security police. Is that true?
You'll have to prove that without help from us, said Selden. We're not answering any further questions.
Russ put away his pad. I'm afraid I must ask you to come with us to headquarters for further interrogation.
I don't think that's necessary, officer, said Selden. We are outworlders who have done nothing criminal. We have tried to avoid a newsman who was annoying us unduly. We tried to protect ourselves against rape and possible murder in a part of the sector known for criminal behavior, and we've spoken to various Dahlites. We see nothing there to warrant our further questioning. It would come under the heading of harassment.
We make these decisions, said Russ, not you.
Will you please come with us?
No, we will not, said Doors.
Watch out, cried out Mistress DeSalver. She's got two knives.
Officer Russ sighed and said, Thank you, Mistress, but I know she does. He turned to Doors. Do you know it's a serious crime to carry a knife without a permit in this sector? Do you have a permit?
No, officer, I don't.
It was clearly with an illegal knife, then, that you assaulted Marin. Do you realize that that greatly increases the seriousness of the crime?
It was no crime, officer, said Doors. Understand that. Marin had a knife as well, and no permit, I am certain.
We have no evidence to that effect, and while Marin has knife wounds, neither of you have any.
Of course he had a knife, officer. If you don't know that every man in Billy Button, and most men elsewhere in Dahl, carry knives, for which they probably don't have permits, then you're the only man in Dahl who doesn't know. There are shops here wherever you turn that sell knives openly. Don't you know that?
Russ said, It doesn't matter what I know or don't know in this respect. Nor does it matter whether other people are breaking the law, or how many of them do. All that matters at this moment is that Mistress Venabili is breaking the anti-knife law. I must ask you to give up those knives to me right now, Mistress, and the two of you must then accompany me to headquarters.
Doris said, In that case, take my knives away from me.
Russ sighed. You must not think, Mistress, that knives are all the weapons there are in Dahl, or that I need engage you in a knife fight. Both my partner and I have blasters that will destroy you in a moment, before you can drop your hands to your knife hilt, however fast you are. We won't use a blaster, of course, because we are not here to kill you. However, each of us also has a neuronic whip, which we can use on you freely. I hope you won't ask for a demonstration. It won't kill you, do you permanent harm of any kind, or leave any marks. But the pain is excruciating. My partner is holding a neuronic whip on you right now, and here is mine. Now, let us have your knives, Mistress Venabili. There was a moment's pause, and then Selden said, It's no use, Doors. Give him your knives. And at that moment, a frantic pounding sounded at the door, and they all heard a voice raised in high-pitched expostulation. 79. Rach had not entirely left the neighborhood after he had walked them back to their apartment house. He had eaten well while waiting for the interview with Devan to be done, and later had slept a bit after finding a bathroom that more or less worked. He really had no place to go now that all that was done. He had a home of sorts, and a mother who was not likely to be perturbed if he stayed away for a while. She never was. He did not know who his father was, and wondered sometimes if he really had one. He had been told he had to have one, and the reasons for that had been explained to him crudely enough. Sometimes he wondered if he ought to believe so peculiar a story, but he did find the details titillating. He thought of that in connection with the lady. She was an old lady, of course, but she was pretty, and she could fight like a man, better than a man. It filled him with vague notions. And she had offered to let him take a bath. He could swim in the Billy Button pool sometimes when he had some credits he didn't need for anything else, or when he could sneak in. Those were the only times he got wet all over, but it was chilly, and he had to wait to get dry. Taking a bath was different. There would be hot water, soap, towels, and warm air. He wasn't sure what it would feel like, except that it would be nice if she was there. He was walkway-wise enough to know of places where he could park himself in an alley off a walkway that would be near a bathroom, and still be near enough to where she was, yet where he probably wouldn't be found and made to run away. He spent the night thinking strange thoughts. What if he did learn to read and write? Could he do something with that? He wasn't sure what, but maybe she could tell him. He had vague ideas of being paid money to do things he didn't know how to do now, but he didn't know what those things might be. He would have to be told. But how do you get told? If he stayed with the man and the lady, they might help. But why should they want him to stay with them? He drowsed off, coming to later, not because the light was brightening, but because his sharp ears caught the heightening and deepening of sounds from the walkway as the activities of the day began. He had learned to identify almost every variety of sound, because in the underground maze of Bellybutton, if you wanted to survive with even a minimum of comfort, you had to be aware of things before you saw them. And there was something about the sound of a ground car motor that he now heard that signaled danger to him. It had an official sound, a hostile sound. He shook himself awake and stole quietly toward the walkway. He scarcely needed to see the spaceship and sun on the ground car. Its lines were enough. He knew they had to be coming for the man and the lady because they had seen the van. He did not pause to question his thoughts or to analyze them. He was off on a run, beating his way through the gathering life of the day. He was back in less than 15 minutes. The ground car was still there, and there were curious and cautious onlookers gazing at it from all sides and from a respectful distance. There would soon be more. He pounded his way up the stairs, trying to remember which door he should bang on. No time for the elevator. He found the door, at least he thought he did, and he banged, shouting in a squeak, "Lady! Lady!" He was too excited to remember her name, but he remembered part of the man's. "Harry!" he shouted, "let me in!" The door opened, and he rushed in. Tried to rush in. The rough hand of an officer seized his arm. "Hold it, kid. Where do you think you're going?"
"Leggo. I ain't done nothing."
He looked about.
"Hey, lady, what are they doing?"
"Arresting us," said Doris grimly.
"What for?"
said Rach, panting and struggling.
"Hey, Leggo, you sun badger. Don't go with him, lady. You don't have to go with him."
"You get out," said Russ, shaking the boy vehemently.
"No, I ain't. You ain't either, Sun Badger. My whole gang is coming. You ain't getting out, lessen you let these guys go."
"What whole gang?" said Russ, frowning.
"They're right outside now, probably taking your ground car apart, and they'll take you apart."
Russ turned toward his partner. "Call headquarters. Have them send out a couple of trucks with macros."
"No!"
shrieked Rach, breaking loose and rushing at Astonwald.
"Don't call!"
Russ leveled his neuronic whip and fired. Rach shrieked, grasped at his right shoulder, and fell down, wriggling madly. Russ had not yet turned back to Selden when the latter, seizing him by the wrist, pushed the neuronic whip up in the air and then around and behind, while stamping on his foot to keep him relatively motionless. Harry could feel the shoulder dislocate, even while Russ emitted a hoarse, agonized yell. Astonwald raised his blaster quickly, but Dora's left arm was around his shoulder, and the knife in her right hand was at his throat. "Don't move," she said. "Move a millimeter, any part of you, and I cut you through your neck to the spine. Drop the blaster. Drop it. And the neuronic whip." Selden picked up Raich, still moaning, and held him tightly. He turned to Tesalver and said, "There are people out there, angry people. I'll have them in here, and they'll break up everything you've got. They'll smash the walls. If you don't want that to happen, pick up those weapons and throw them into the next room. Take the weapons from the security officer on the floor and do the same. Quickly. Get your wife to help. She'll think twice next time before sending in complaints against innocent people. Doors, this one on the floor won't do anything for a while. Put the other one out of action, but don't kill him."
"Right," said Doors.
Reversing her knife, she struck him hard on the skull with the haft. He went to his knees. She made a face.
"I hate doing that."
"They fired at Raich," said Selden, trying to mask his own sick feeling at what had happened. They left the apartment hurriedly, and once out on the walkway found it choked with people, almost all men, who raised a shout when they saw them emerge. They pushed in close, and the smell of poorly washed humanity was overpowering. Someone shouted, "Where are the sun badgers?"
"Inside," called out Doors piercingly. "Leave them alone. They'll be helpless for a while, but they'll get reinforcements, so get out of here fast."
"What about you?" came from a dozen throats.
"We're getting out, too. We won't be back."
"I'll take care of them,"
shrilled Raich, struggling out of Selden's arms and standing on his feet. He was rubbing his right shoulder madly.
"I can walk. Let me past."
The crowd opened for him, and he said,
"Mister, lady, come with me. Fast."
They were accompanied down the walkway by several dozen men, and then Raich suddenly gestured at an opening and muttered,
"In here, folks. I'll take you to a place no one will ever find you. Even Devan probably don't know it. Only thing is, we got to go through the sewer levels. No one'll see us there, but it's sort of stinky. Know what I mean?"
"I imagine we'll survive," muttered Selden. And down they went along a narrow, spiraling ramp, and up rose the mephitic odors to greet them. 80. Raich found them a hiding place. It had meant climbing up the metal rungs of a ladder, and it had led them to a large, loft-like room, the use of which Selden could not imagine. It was filled with equipment, bulky and silent, the function of which also remained a mystery. The room was reasonably clean and free of dust, and a steady draft of air wafted through that prevented the dust from settling, and, more important, seemed to lessen the odor. Raich seemed pleased.
"Ain't this nice?" he demanded.
He still rubbed his shoulder now and then, and winced when he rubbed too hard.
"It could be worse," said Selden. "Do you know what this place is used for, Raich?"
Raich shrugged, or began to do so, and winced.
"I dunno,"
he said. Then he added with a touch of swagger,
"Who cares?"
Doors, who had sat down on the floor after brushing it with her hand, and then looking suspiciously at her palm, said,
"If you want to guess, I think this is part of a complex that is involved in the detoxification and recycling of wastes. The stuff must surely end up as fertilizer."
"Then," said Selden gloomily, "those who run the complex will be down here periodically, and may come at any moment, for all we know."
"I've been here before," said Raich. "I never saw no one here."
"I suppose Trantor is heavily automated wherever possible, and if anything calls for automation, it would be this treatment of wastes," said Doors. "We may be safe, for a while."
"Not for long. We'll get hungry and thirsty, Doors."
"I can get food and water for us," said Raich. "You got to know how to make out if you're an alley kid."
"Thank you, Raich,"
said Selden absently. But right now I'm not hungry. He sniffed. I may never be hungry again.
You will be, said Doris. And even if you lose your appetite for a while, you'll get thirsty. At least elimination is no problem. We're practically living over what is clearly an open sewer.
There was silence for a while. The light was dim, and Selden wondered why the Trantorians didn't keep it dark altogether. But then it occurred to him that he had never encountered true darkness in any public area. It was probably a habit in an energy-rich society. Strange that a world of 40 billion should be energy-rich, but with the internal heat of the planet to draw upon, to say nothing of solar energy and nuclear fusion plants in space, it was. In fact, come to think of it, there was no energy-poor planet in the Empire. Was there a time when technology had been so primitive that energy poverty was possible? He leaned against a system of pipes through which, for all he knew, sewage ran. He drew away from the pipes as the thought occurred to him, and he sat down next to Doris. He said, Is there any way we can get in touch with Cheddar Hummin? Doris said, As a matter of fact, I did send a message, though I hated to.
You hated to?
My orders are to protect you. Each time I have to get in touch with him, it means I've failed.
Selden regarded her out of narrowed eyes. Do you have to be so compulsive, Doris? You can't protect me against the security officers of an entire sector.
I suppose not. We can disable a few.
I know. We did. But they'll send out reinforcements. Armored ground cars, neuronic cannon, sleeping mist. I'm not sure what they have, but they're going to throw in their entire armory, I'm sure of it.
You're probably right, said Doris, her mouth tightening.
They won't find you, lady,
said Reich suddenly. His sharp eyes had moved from one to the other as they talked.
They never find Devan.
Doris smiled without joy and ruffled the boy's hair, then looked at the palm of her hand with a little dismay. She said,
I'm not sure if you ought to stay with us, Rach. I don't want them finding you.
They won't find me. And if I leave you, who'll get you food and water? And who'll find you new hiding places so the sun badgers'll never know where to look?
No, Rach, they'll find us. They don't really look too hard for Devan. He annoys them, but I suspect they don't take him seriously. Do you know what I mean?
You mean he's just a pain in the neck, and they figure he ain't worth chasing all over the lot?
Yes, that's what I mean. But you see, we hurt two of the officers very badly, and they're not going to let us get away with that. If it takes their whole force, if they have to sweep through every hidden or unused corridor in the sector, they'll get us.
Rach said,
That makes me feel like nothing. If I didn't run in there and get zapped, you wouldn't have taken out them officers, and you wouldn't be in such trouble.
No, sooner or later we'd have taken them out. Who knows? We may have to take out a few more.
Well, you did it beautiful, said Rach. If I hadn't been aching all over, I could have watched more and enjoyed it.
Selden said, It wouldn't do us any good to try to fight the entire security system. The question is, what will they do to us once they have us? A prison sentence, surely.
Oh, no. If necessary, we'll have to appeal to the Emperor,
put in Doris.
The Emperor? Said Rach, wide-eyed. You know the Emperor?
Selden waved at the boy. Any galactic citizen can appeal to the Emperor.
That strikes me as the wrong thing to do, Doris. Ever since Haman and I left the Imperial Sector, we've been evading the Emperor.
Not to the extent of being thrown into a Dalite prison. The Imperial appeal will serve as a delay, in any case a diversion, and perhaps in the course of that delay we can think of something else.
There's Haman.
Yes, there is, said Doris uneasily. But we can't consider him the do-it-all. For one thing, even if my message reached him, and even if he was able to rush to Dahl, how would he find us here? And even if he did, what could he do against the entire Dahlite security force?
In that case, said Selden, we're going to have to think of something we can do before they find us.
Raich said, If you follow me, I can keep you ahead of them. I know every place there is around here.
You can keep us ahead of one person, but there'll be a great many moving down any number of corridors. We'll escape one group and bump into another.
They sat in uncomfortable silence for a good while, each confronting what seemed to be a hopeless situation. Then Doris Van Abbele stirred and said in a tense, low whisper,
They're here. I hear them.
For a while they strained, listening. Then Reach sprang to his feet and hissed,
They coming that way. We gotta go this way.
Selden, confused, heard nothing at all, but would have been content to trust the other's superior hearing. But even as Raich began moving hastily and quietly away from the direction of the approaching tread, a voice rang out, echoing against the sewer walls.
Don't move! Don't move!
And Raich said,
That's Devan. How'd he know we were here?
Devan, said Selden, are you sure?
Sure, I'm sure. He'll help.
81.
Devan asked, What happened? Selden felt minimally relieved. Surely the addition of Devan could scarcely count against the full force of the Dahl Sector. But then again, he commanded a number of people who might create enough confusion. He said, You should know, Devan. I suspect that many of the crowd who were at DeSalver's place this morning were your people.
Yes, a number were. The story is that you were being arrested and that you manhandled a squadron of sunbadgers. But why were you being arrested?
Two, said Selden, lifting two fingers. Two sunbadgers.
And that's bad enough. Part of the reason we were being arrested was that we had gone to see you.
That's not enough. The sunbadgers don't bother with me much as a general thing.
He added bitterly, They underestimate me.
Maybe, said Selden. But the woman from whom we rent our rooms reported us for having started a riot over the newsman we ran into on our way to you. You know about that. With your people on the scene yesterday and again this morning, and with two officers badly hurt, they may well decide to clean out these corridors, and that means you will suffer. I really am sorry. I had no intention or expectation of being the cause of any of this.
But Devan shook his head.
No, you don't know the Sunbadgers. That's not enough either. They don't want to clean us up.
The Sector would have to do something about us if they did.
They're only too happy to let us rot in Billybutton and the other slums.
No, they're after you.
You. What have you done?
Doris said impatiently.
We've done nothing. And in any case, what does it matter? If they're not after you, and they are after us, they're going to come down here to flush us out. If you get in the way, you'll be in deep trouble.
No, not me. I have friends, powerful friends, said Devan. I told you that last night. And they can help you as well as me. When you refused to help us openly, I got in touch with them. They know who you are, Dr. Selden. You're a famous man. They're in a position to talk to the mayor of Dahl and see to it that you are left alone, whatever you have done. But you'll have to be taken away, out of Dahl. Selden smiled. Relief flooded over him. He said, You know someone powerful, do you, Devan? Someone who responds at once? Who has the ability to talk the Dahl government out of taking drastic steps?
And who can take us away?
Good. I'm not surprised. He turned to Doors, smiling. It's Mycogen all over again. How does Hummin do it? But Doors shook her head.
Too quick. I don't understand.
Selden said, I believe he can do anything.
I know him better than you do, and longer, and I don't believe that.
Selden smiled. Don't underestimate him. And then, as though anxious not to linger longer on that subject, he turned to Devan. But how did you find us? Rach said you knew nothing about this place.
He don't, shrilled Rach indignantly. This place is all mine. I found it.
I've never been here before, said Devan, looking about. It's an interesting place. Rach is a corridor creature, perfectly at home in this maze.
Yes, Devan, we gathered as much ourselves. But how did you find it?
A heat seeker. I have a device that detects infrared radiation, the particular thermal pattern that is given off at 37 degrees Celsius. It will react to the presence of human beings and not to other heat sources. It reacted to you three.
Doors was frowning.
What good is that on Trantor, where there are human beings everywhere? They have them on other worlds, but...
Devan said, But not on Trantor, I know. Except that they are useful in the slums, in the forgotten, decaying corridors and alleyways.
And where did you get it? Asked Selden.
Devan said, It's enough that I have it. But we've got to get you away, Master Selden. Too many people want you, and I want my powerful friend to have you.
Where is he? This powerful friend of yours.
He is approaching. At least a new 37-degree source is registering, and I don't see that it can be anyone else. Through the door strode a newcomer, but Selden's glad exclamation died on his lips. It was not Cheddar Hummin.
Why?
Why, a sector of the world city of Trantor, in the latter centuries of the Galactic Empire, Why was the strongest and stablest portion of the world city. Its rulers had long aspired to the imperial throne, justifying that by their descent from early emperors. Under Mannix IV, Why was militarized and, imperial authorities later claimed, was planning a planet-wide coup. Encyclopedia Galactica.
82.
The man who entered was tall and muscular. He had a long blonde mustache that curled up at the tips, and a fringe of hair that went down the sides of his face and under his chin, leaving the point of his chin and his lower lip smoothly bare and seeming a little moist. His head was so closely cropped, and his hair was so light, that for one unpleasant moment Selden was reminded of Mycogen. His head was so closely cropped, and his hair was so light, that for one unpleasant moment Selden was reminded of Mycogen. The newcomer wore what was unmistakably a uniform. It was red and white, and about his waist was a wide belt decorated with silver studs. His voice, when he spoke, was a rolling bass, and its accent was not like any that Selden had heard before. Most unfamiliar accents sounded uncouth in Selden's experience, but this one seemed almost musical, perhaps because of the richness of the low tones. "I am Sergeant Emmer Thellis," he rumbled in a slow succession of syllables. "I have come seeking Dr. Harry Selden." Selden said, "I am he." In an aside to Doors, he muttered, "If Hummon couldn't come himself, he certainly sent a magnificent side of beef to represent him." The sergeant favored Selden with a stolid and slightly prolonged look. Then he said, "Yes, you have been described to me. Please come with me, Dr. Selden." Selden said, "Lead the way." The sergeant stepped backward. Selden and Doris Van Everly stepped forward. The sergeant stopped and raised a large hand, palm toward Doris. "I have been instructed to take Dr. Harry Selden with me. I have not been instructed to take anyone else." For a moment, Selden looked at him uncomprehendingly. Then his look of surprise gave way to anger. "It's quite impossible that you have been told that, Sergeant. Dr. Doris Van Everly is my associate and my companion. She must come with me."
"That is not in accordance with my instructions, Doctor."
"I don't care about your instructions in any way, Sergeant Thellis. I do not budge without her." "What's more," said Doris with clear irritation, "my instructions are to protect Dr. Selden at all times. I cannot do that unless I am with him. Therefore, where he goes, I go." The sergeant looked puzzled.
"My instructions are strict that I see to it that no harm comes to you, Dr. Selden. If you will not come voluntarily, I must carry you to my vehicle. I will try to do so gently."
He extended his two arms as though to seize Selden by the waist and carry him off bodily. Selden skittered backward and out of reach. As he did so, the side of his right palm came down on the sergeant's right upper arm where the muscles were thinnest, so that he struck the bone. The sergeant drew a sudden deep breath and seemed to shake himself a bit, but turned, face expressionless, and advanced again. Devan, watching, remained where he was, motionless, but Raich moved behind the sergeant. Selden repeated his palm stroke a second time, then a third. But now, Sergeant Thellis, anticipating the blow, lowered his shoulder to catch it on hard muscle. Doris had drawn her knives. "Sergeant," she said forcefully, "turn in this direction. I want you to understand I may be forced to hurt you severely if you persist in attempting to carry Dr. Selden off against his will." The sergeant paused, seemed to take in the slowly waving knives solemnly, then said,
"It is not in my instructions to refrain from harming anyone but Dr. Selden."
His right hand moved with surprising speed toward the neuronic whip in the holster at his hip. Doors moved as quickly forward, knives flashing. Neither completed the movement. Dashing forward, Raich had pushed at the sergeant's back with his left hand and withdrew the sergeant's weapon from its holster with his right. He moved away quickly, holding the neuronic whip in both hands now and shouting,
"Hands up, sergeant, or you're gonna get it."
The sergeant whirled, and a nervous look crossed his reddening face. It was the only moment that its stolidity had weakened.
"Put that down, sonny," he growled. "You don't know how it works."
Raich howled.
"I know about the safety. It's off, and this thing can fire. And it will, if you try to rush me."
The sergeant froze. He clearly knew how dangerous it was to have an excited 12-year-old handling a powerful weapon. Nor did Selden feel much better. He said, "Careful, Raich, don't shoot.
Keep your finger off the contact.
I ain't gonna let him rush me.
He won't. Sergeant, please don't move. Let's get something straight. You were told to take me away from here, is that right?
That's right, said the sergeant,
eyes somewhat protruding and firmly fixed on Rach, whose eyes were as firmly fixed on the sergeant. But you were not told to take anyone else, is that right?
No, I was not, doctor, said the sergeant firmly.
Not even the threat of a neuronic whip was going to make him weasel. One could see that. Very well. But listen to me, Sergeant. Were you told not to take anyone else?
I just said.
No, no. Listen, Sergeant. There's a difference. Were your instructions simply, take Dr. Selden? Was that the entire order with no mention of anyone else? Or were the orders more specific? Were your orders as follows, take Dr. Selden and don't take anyone else? The sergeant turned that over in his head. Then he said,
I was told to take you, Dr. Selden.
Then there was no mention of anyone else, one way or the other, was there? Pause.
No.
You were not told to take Dr. Venabile. But you were not told not to take Dr. Venabile either. Is that right?
Pause. Yes.
So you can either take her or not take her, whichever you please. Long pause.
I suppose so.
Now then, there's Rach, the young fellow who's got a neuronic whip pointing at you. Your neuronic whip, remember? And he is anxious to use it.
Yay!
Shouted Rach. Not yet, Rach, said Selden. And here is Dr. Venabile with two knives that she can use very expertly. And there's myself, who can, if I get the chance, break your Adam's apple with one hand so that you'll never speak above a whisper again. Now then, do you want to take Dr. Venabile, or don't you want to? Your orders allow you to do either. And finally, the sergeant said in a beaten voice,
I will take the woman.
And the boy, Rach.
And the boy.
Good. Have I your word of honor, your word of honor as a soldier, that you will do as you have just said, honestly?
You have my word of honor as a soldier, said the sergeant.
Good. Rach, give back the whip. Now, don't make me wait. Rach, his face twisted into an unhappy grimace, looked at Doris, who hesitated and then slowly nodded her head. Her face was as unhappy as Rach's. Rach held out the neuronic whip to the sergeant and said,
They're making me, you big...
His last words were unintelligible. Selden said, Put away your knives, Doris. Doris shook her head, but put them away. Now, Sergeant, said Selden. The sergeant looked at the neuronic whip, then at Selden. He said,
You are an honorable man, Dr. Selden. And my word of honor holds.
With a military snap, he placed his neuronic whip in his holster. Selden turned to Devan and said, Devan, please forget what you have seen here. We three are going voluntarily with Sergeant Thallus. You tell Hugo Amaril when you see him that I will not forget him, and that once this is over and I am free to act, I will see that he gets into a university. And if there's anything reasonable I can ever do for your cause, Devan, I will. Now, Sergeant, let's go. Have you ever been in an air jet before, Rach? Asked Harry Selden. Rach shook his head speechlessly. He was looking down at Upperside rushing beneath them with a mixture of fright and awe.
It struck Selden again how much Trantor was a world of expressways and tunnels. Even long trips were made underground by the general population. Air travel, however common it might be on the outworlds, was a luxury on Trantor, and an air jet like this. How had Hummin managed it, Selden wondered. He looked out the window at the rise and fall of the domes, at the general green in this area of the planet, the occasional patches of what were little less than jungles, the arms of the sea they occasionally passed over, with its leaden waters taking on a sudden, all-too-brief sparkle when the sun peeped out momentarily from the heavy cloud layer. An hour or so into the flight, Doors, who was viewing a new historical novel, without much in the way of apparent enjoyment, clicked it off and said,
"I wish I knew where we were going."
"If you can't tell," said Selden, "then I certainly can't. You've been on Trantor longer than I have."
"Yes, but only on the inside," said Doors. "Out here, with only upper side below me, I'm as lost as an unborn infant would be."
"Oh, well, presumably Hummin knows what he's doing."
"I'm sure he does," replied Doors rather tartly. "But that may have nothing to do with the present situation. Why do you continue to assume any of this represents his initiative?"
Selden's eyebrows lifted.
"Now that you ask, I don't know. I just assumed it. Why shouldn't this be his?" "Because whoever arranged it didn't specify that I be taken along with you. I simply don't see Hummin forgetting my existence. And because he didn't come himself, as he did at Streeling and at Mycogen."
"You can't always expect him to, Doors. He might well be occupied. The astonishing thing is not that he didn't come on this occasion, but that he did come on the previous ones."
"Assuming he didn't come himself, would he send a conspicuous and lavish flying palace like this?"
She gestured around her at the large, luxurious jet. "It might simply have been available, and he might have reasoned that no one would expect something as noticeable as this to be carrying fugitives who were desperately trying to avoid detection. The well-known double-double cross."
"Too well-known, in my opinion. And would he send an idiot like Sergeant Thallus in his place?"
"The sergeant is no idiot. He's simply been trained to complete obedience. With proper instructions, he could be utterly reliable."
"There you are, Harry. We come back to that. Why didn't he get proper instructions? It's inconceivable to me that Cheddar Hummin would tell him to carry you out of Dahl and not say a word about me. Inconceivable."
And to that Selden had no answer, and his spirit sank. Another hour passed, and Doris said,
"It looks as if it's getting colder outside. The green of upperside is turning brown, and I believe the heaters have turned on."
"What does that signify?"
"Dahl is in the tropic zone, so obviously we're going either north or south, and a considerable distance, too. If I had some notion in which direction the nightline was, I could tell which."
Eventually, they passed over a section of shoreline where there was a rim of ice hugging the domes where they were rimmed by the sea. And then, quite unexpectedly, the air jet angled downward. Rach screamed,
"We're going to hit! We're going to smash up!"
Selden's abdominal muscles tightened, and he clutched the arms of his seat. Doris seemed unaffected. She said,
"The pilots up front don't seem alarmed. We'll be tunneling."
And as she said so, the jet's wings swept backward and under it, and like a bullet, the air jet entered a tunnel. Blackness swept back over them in an instant, and a moment later the lighting system in the tunnel turned on. The walls of the tunnel snaked past the jet on either side.
I don't suppose I'll ever be sure they know the tunnel isn't already occupied, muttered Selden.
I'm sure they had reassurance of a clear tunnel some dozens of kilometers earlier, said Doris. At any rate, I presume this is the last stage of the journey, and soon we'll know where we are.
She paused and then added,
And I further presume we won't like the knowledge when we have it.
84. The air jets sped out of the tunnel and onto a long runway, with a roof so high that it seemed closer to true daylight than anything Selden had seen since he had left the Imperial sector. They came to a halt in a shorter time than Selden would have expected, but at the price of an uncomfortable pressure forward. Rach, in particular, was crushed against the seat before him, and was finding it difficult to breathe till Dora's hand on his shoulder pulled him back slightly. Sergeant Thallus, impressive and erect, left the jet and moved to the rear, where he opened the door of the passenger compartment and helped the three out, one by one. Selden was last. He half turned as he passed the sergeant, saying, It was a pleasant trip, Sergeant. A slow smile spread over the sergeant's large face and lifted his mustachioed upper lip. He touched the visor of his cap in what was half a salute and said,
Thank you again, Doctor.
They were then ushered into the back seat of a ground car of lavish design, and the sergeant himself pushed into the front seat and drove the vehicle with a surprisingly light touch. They passed through wide roadways, flanked by tall, well-designed buildings, all glistening in broad daylight. As elsewhere on Trantor, they heard the distant drone of an expressway. The walkways were crowded with what were, for the most part, well-dressed people. The surroundings were remarkably, almost excessively, clean. Selden's sense of security sank further. Dora's misgivings concerning their destination now seemed justified after all. He leaned toward her and said, Do you think we are back in the Imperial sector? She said,
No. The buildings are more rococo in the Imperial sector, and there's less Imperial parkishness to this sector, if you know what I mean.
Then where are we, Doris?
We'll have to ask, I'm afraid, Harry.
It was not a long trip, and soon they rolled into a car bay that flanked an imposing four-story structure. A frieze of imaginary animals ran along the top, decorated with strips of warm pink stone. It was an impressive facade, with a rather pleasing design. Selden said,
That certainly looks rococo enough.
Doris shrugged uncertainly. Rach whistled, and said in a failing attempt to sound unimpressed,
Hey, look at that fancy place.
Sergeant Thallus gestured to Selden, clearly indicating that he was to follow. Selden hung back, and also relying on the universal language of gesture, held out both arms, clearly including Doris and Rach. The sergeant hesitated in a slightly hangdog fashion at the impressive pink doorway. His mustache almost seemed to droop. Then he said gruffly,
All three of you, then. My word of honor holds. Still, others may not feel obligated by my own obligation, you know.
Selden nodded. I hold you responsible for your own deeds only, Sergeant. The sergeant was clearly moved, and for a moment his face lightened, as though he was considering the possibility of shaking Selden's hand, or expressing his heartfelt approval in some other way. He decided against it, however, and stepped onto the bottom step of the flight that led to the door. The stairs immediately began a stately upward movement. Selden and Doris stepped after him at once, and kept their balance without much trouble. Rach, who was momentarily staggered in surprise,
jumped onto the moving stairs after a short run,
shoved both hands into his pockets, and whistled carelessly. The door opened, and two women